next case is State v. Chiloa.
May I please report? I'm Tom Wakely, Douglas County Assistant Public Defender. This is Nicholas Seale, certified senior law student. He's going to present the argument.
Very good.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Yost.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I please report? As Mr. Wakely had already mentioned, my name is Nicholas Seals. I'm a senior certified law clerk for Douglas County Public Defender's Office. I, along with Tom Wakely and Rebecca McClung, represent Jacob Chiloa at this appeal. Before I begin, I would like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal time.
Okay.
Your Honor, there are 7 issues before the court this morning as it relates to this appeal, but I would like to focus on 2. The first is the district court's failure to exercise discretion when it allowed the jury unfettered and unsupervised access to the interrogation video of Mr. Chiloa by Sergeant Navani of the Ball Police Department. The second is the district court's failure to grant a motion for a mistrial as a result of prosecutorial misconduct during the closing argument above. State Supreme Court in State v. Dixon has noted that allowing juries access to portions of evidence is fraught with danger because the jury may give undue influence to a part of the evidence which is to be reheard.
Sorry to interrupt you. Just to make sure, the video that we're talking about, do you agree it's substantive, non-testimonial?
Yes, Your Honor, I do agree that it's substantive and non-testimonial.
In that situation, when a judge is presented with substantive, non-testimonial evidence, what's the proposition of law or the rule or whatever that governs his or her decision on whether that goes to the jury?
If the evidence is non-testimonial or substantive in nature, Your Honor, the judge, has broad discretion in allowing that evidence to go back.
Okay. So if the judge has broad discretion, is the issue in this case not that he exercised discretion and allowed it to go back, but rather his belief that he didn't have discretion and it had to go back?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. Just want to make sure I understood the issue. Thank you.
No problem. And relating to that point, specifically when the jury had indicated it wanted to rehear this interrogation video, it had indicated during deliberations it would like to rehear it. Having determined that the video itself was substantive in nature, the court had noted, whether I say I agree with you or not, I feel like I'm controlled by the rule of law and I think I have to allow them to review it. This excerpt appears apparent that the court believed it was compelled to allow the jury to review this evidence, and therefore it did not exercise discretion in determining whether this interrogation video could go back to the jury or whether she was held from the jury.
If there were photos in evidence and the jury requested that the photos be sent back, they would be sent back, wouldn't they?
Yes, they would.
Because they were in evidence. Correct? They've been
correct.
Received into evidence. Same with documents, say prints of emails or text messages, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So why is this any different?
Your Honor, this is different because I believe if you were to lay out testimonial evidence versus substantive evidence on a spectrum, this particular interrogation video is much closer to testimonial in nature, testimonial evidence in nature.
What case
tells you that?
The case I would distinguish from this is State v. Endeavor, which also included an 8-minute video of an interview. As the state had noted in its brief, there were some similarities between the two cases. Specifically, both cases involved a video, and both cases involved what was determined to be substantive evidence. However, there were more material differences between these two videos than there were similarities.
Let me ask you another question. You're saying that the issue is that the judge didn't believe the judge had discretion. Well, nonetheless, if the video could have been rightfully sent back to the jury, why does it matter whether the judge was wrong on whether he had discretion or not?
Your Honor, I would believe, or we would contend that if the judge failed to exercise discretion, this would be an abuse of its discretion. An abuse of discretion can be defined as any unreasonable or untenable action, or an action that is clearly against justice, conscience, reason or evidence.
Don't the appellate courts routinely affirm decisions of trial judges under a different rationale than what the trial judge had?
They do, Your Honor.
Why is that any different than this?
In this case, because the particular interrogation video itself was so close to being testimonial in nature.
Well, now you're getting to the second question.
Okay.
I'm asking the first question. Why is this any different than an appellate court saying, well, the trial court may not have realized something, or may have their rationale may have been mistaken, but despite the fact that the rationale is mistaken, their result is correct. Now, that gets us to whether this is distinguishable from Vandiver. I understand that. But why is this court, would this court be prevented from utilizing that, right? That approach?
In regard, this court would not be prevented necessarily from using that approach. However, if this court believed as though either the trial court had exercised discretion or that for some other reason it was permitted to go back, we would argue that the allowance of this particular interrogation video to go back to the jury was still an abuse of discretion because it was an action against justice. Because this particular interrogation video was so close to testimonial evidence that it unduly influenced how the jury would view the particular case, and it allowed the jury to place undue emphasis on this piece of evidence as opposed to other evidence that had been received earlier in the week of the trial, Your Honor.
Can we tell from the judge's comments whether he would have allowed it to go back if he thought he had the discretion not to?
I believe, Your Honor, and I cannot recall an actual page number off the top of my head from the BOE, but I believe the judge admitted that whether he agreed with what he was saying on the record or not, he felt as though he had to allow it to go back. Based on the whether he agreed with what he was saying on the record or not, it appears as though if he thought he had discretion, he would not have allowed this to go back.
And then do we have a whole different situation, maybe a whole different outcome, if the judge had not allowed the video to go back?
I believe so, Your Honor. This is a case that was very much relied on credibility, specifically the credibility of RC, the child in this instance. There was no physical evidence presented implicating Mr. Chalewa in this particular case. And allowing the jury to watch this video as many times as it pleased would essentially be able to gauge the credibility of Mr. Chalewa and compare that with the credibility of the child in this particular instance.
He did not otherwise testify, correct?
He did not otherwise testify, Your Honor. So based on this, if we were to distinguish from Vandiver, there are, as I mentioned, a number of issues that distinguish that particular video from the video in this particular case. To begin with, I mean, some of the most obvious is the time. In Vandiver, it was an 8-minute video, which is not much more time than I have before this court this morning, compared to the hour and 10-minute interrogation that occurred with Mr. Chalewa. Additionally, as I'd already mentioned, in Vandiver, there was physical evidence implicating Mr. Vandiver in that particular case, and there was no physical evidence in this case implicating Mr. Chalewa. You could also, if you take a look at what the tone of the conversation was in Vandiver, it seems much more conversational and almost a conversation between two friends, as opposed to the almost cross-examination-like interrogation of Mr. Chalewa. And maybe one of the most telling distinguishing factors between these two is in Vandiver, the jury was allowed to review the tape only once, and it was in the presence of a bailiff. In this case, the judge gave the DVD to the jury and allowed them to watch it as many times as they wanted, unsupervised, and they were able to determine or at least gauge the credibility of Mr. Chalewa.
But aren't those safeguards that the court has imposed when dealing with testimonial evidence? I mean, there's certain, if you have testimonial evidence, one of the cases says, these are the safeguards that should be put into effect. But we've already established this is non-testimonial, so do those safeguards, that procedure, even apply to this?
As it relates to like the heightened procedures that were kind of announced in State versus Endeavor, those heightened procedures do not apply because we agree that it is substantive in nature. However, the broad discretion trial courts are allowed is twofold, in my opinion. It allows the court to permit juries to review evidence, but it also allows them to prohibit juries from reviewing or rehearing evidence that it may be so close to testimonial in nature, although admittedly substantive, that is almost an injustice to allow them to review that case as many times as they would like.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Ralph, before you get going, is there a way just to turn the microphones off?
I apologize for the problem we're having with these today, but
are you technologically savvy? So if we talk, if you hold it down,
maybe just do this,
or hold it down.
Hold it down. Just while we're
talking. Just yell at you.
Good morning.
Good morning. May I please report? My name is Austin Rowe. I represent the state of Nebraska. As the court is aware, this appeal presents several issues, and as opposing counsel has focused on just two of those, namely the interrogation video as well as the prosecutorial misconduct, I will do the same. Addressing the interrogation video, basically I think the case is more or less controlled by the state of Vandenberg, but preliminarily, my review of the record, basically as I set forth in my brief, I see the district court as having exercised its discretion, in particular the very last statement by the court. My understanding of the state of the law is they're allowed to review it. I'm going to permit that. As I read that, the court's permitting the jury is indicative of exercising discretion. So.
Even though he seems to indicate, at least from my reading, he seems to indicate the law requires that I send it back. Therefore, I'm going to permit it.
Well, my recollection, it's been a while since I read the Bill of Exceptions, I think. Case has been delayed a couple of times, but anyway, I think it starts out sort of that way, and then the defense counsel at one point says, it's still discretionary, isn't it? I'm doing this on the fly. I apologize. And that's when I think the court says, well, we may find different rulings from different judges. My personal opinion may be different than what I'm saying on the record, but he basically permits them to do that.
But my understanding of the state of the law is that the jury is allowed to review it.
Generally allowed to review it, yes. So I'm going to permit that. I guess I see that as an exercise of discretion.
Okay, let's pretend it's not.
Right.
Okay, let's pretend the judge believes it has to go back.
Okay.
Is that a problem?
Well, no. I mean, I think at most it would be a harmless error type thing.
To be harmless error, then, wouldn't we have to find that the jury's review of this didn't affect it?
Well, I guess if the error is a failure to exercise discretion, I think you got to look at it from the viewpoint that, okay, now at district court you have this discretion. If you understand Vandenberg and all these other things, how would you rule? Well, Vandenberg, I think, basically says if it's substantive non-testimonial evidence, it goes back unless there's some reason to restrict it. I mean, you have basically broad discretion allowing the jury unlimited access to properly received exhibits that constitute substantive evidence. As Judge Pirtle, I think emphasized earlier, it's the same as any sort of document or any sort of picture. These things routinely go back because that's the evidence in the case. The only time an exercise of discretion, I think, would be proper to limit a review of substantive non-testimonial evidence would be, for example, if a portion of the video recording should have been redacted or was inadmissible or for some reason that particular exhibit, some portion of it that might have been a problem. Well, then it makes sense to have it, the review be supervised or to limit perhaps the review. But when it's no objection, there's no restriction on the evidence as it's admitted, I think it would be an abuse of discretion if he hadn't allowed it to go back. So while you know, if this court, you know, sees it as a failure to exercise discretion, I think technically that would be an error. To me, it would be a harmless error, because had the court actually exercised its discretion, it would have had to send it back under Vandermeer. So that's why I take the position that any error would have been harmless. Additionally, you know, it would have been harmless too, because I guess I just don't see the prejudicial effect from reviewing a tape, or reviewing a photograph, or reviewing whatever the substantive non-testimonial evidence is. As Your Honor pointed out, the restrictions on supervision or heightened procedures or what have you is for testimonial evidence, and this is not testimonial evidence, and that's clear in the random room. So I guess, I think it was an exercise of discretion, but even if it were not, any error would be harmless. The tape should have gone back. It went back in accordance with Vandermeer. So I think this assignment of error has no merit. I know opposing counsel didn't have the time to get to the prosecutorial misconduct, but I thought I'd go ahead and address it since he was focusing on it. And in short, I really don't see how it was misconduct. I think he was just basically addressing an argument from the defense counsel. Responding to that, I didn't see it as improper opinion. It's more just stating a logical response. And I didn't see it as improper vouching, as I set forth in my brief. In any event, I don't see any prejudice from it. It was an isolated incident, a single time. It wasn't egregious. The defendant did not actually ask for a curative instruction. I think most importantly, the district court, who's in the best position to see the effect the comment has on the jury, so it's harmless error. So I don't think the mistrial is warranted. Unless the court has further questions on the other assigned errors.
Going back to the Vandermeer case, do you see any other distinctions like the appellant was addressing, for example, 8 minutes versus an hour and 10 minutes, anything like that?
Well, I think those are distinctions without a difference. The videotape in Vandermeer was, an edited 8-minute video of the interrogation, but still had the same back and forth between the defendant and the police officer. It still had the same purpose, which was basically to get admissions, to get incriminating evidence. They said it's not testimonial, and I think regardless of the length of time or how close it is to testimonial, they said interrogation by a police officer of a defendant is non-testimonial substantive evidence under the law, and so it's not subject to heightened procedures. Basically, it goes back. Jury's allowed to have unlimited access to it. So those distinctions, I think, don't actually distinguish Vandermeer fully.
And Judge Ardenburn had asked earlier, is this one of those wrong reason but right result?
It might be a little bit different in terms of a failure to exercise discretion. This is what that court saw that as. It might be a little bit different in terms of generally what we're reviewing. This court is reviewing a decision of the lower court under the proper framework, whereas if it wasn't an exercise of discretion, he just didn't make the decision at all, I guess. Maybe a little bit different, but as I said, I think any error here would have been harmless, because if he had exercised discretion, the only result, I think, under Vandermeer is it goes back. So I don't see an issue with that.
So you would disagree in terms of it's either one end of the spectrum, it's either on one end or the other, and there's no sliding scale.
In terms of,
if it's non-testimonial or it's testimonial, it's either one or the other. There's no, it's closer to, even though it's non-testimonial.
Right, right. And I think that's what the Supreme Court said in Vandermeer. They looked at the definition of testimonial under the relevant law and said that interrogation by, officer of a defendant simply is not testimonial evidence. So it's either one or the other.
Thank you very much. I believe the appellant is out of time. Is that correct? Okay. Thank you. The case is submitted. We have it under advisement. Thank you for being here this morning.